Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Ramadan Mubarak and Assalamu Alaikum to all my brothers and sisters and friends and relatives. I greet you in the greetings of peace of Assalamu Alaikum and pray that Almighty God, bless us with a good program today and bless all that we're trying to achieve. I greet you in that greetings, and I greet you only for the peace that can come to us by the way of the Almighty God who created man. I welcome you to Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom, the information program, information-rich program that is broadcasted every week, each week here on AM 360. I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African Balian American Griot, and I host this program, airs here every Tuesday evening, 5 to 7. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight we have two very special guests, Imani C. Scott and Kim Austin, in honoring our Women's History Month. It's going to be a terrific program. These are two wonderful guests we're going to have for you this evening. And as usual, we have a floor that's pretty much open to the listeners to give their opinions and ask their questions. During the program, you will have the opportunity to ask questions and to make comments by pressing the one on your phone. And we'll see you there, and then we'll bring you into the program, and you can ask the questions that you wish to ask to our guests and also to the host. And but however, we do ask that you be sort of mindful of the time, because we are time sensitive here at this program. So be a little mindful of the time, and you could be able to get your points in and get your answers that you're seeking. Our goal here is to dig deep into the hidden stories of and especially the untold truth about our ancestors and their goals and their messages, and especially their messages. Their messages that they left for the future generations to follow. These messages were covered over by with this lies and distortion of the of truth and the misrepresentation of the cumulative knowledge of our foreparents and the belief systems that they had and what they established. This was all done by the European American system. Once that system was put in place, it sort of moves in an automatic position until that system that they established is disrupted by our people, any people who has a wish to see what is right, wish to see what is good for all human beings. But we must look at that point. And we must do something about that as far as our history is concerned. Our goal is to dig deep into that knowledge, and our goal is to bring out this information here and see what destiny, what direction that our forefathers have our people headed in. We were given opportunities to develop and grow in this rich society, rich earth, and we wanted to be able to grow, and we wanted to be able to develop ourselves. Research produces the evidence and the facts necessary that each individual or a culture in progress, and it culture sort of creates the longevity of a people. And and what we stress here most is this fact of mental freedom. Mental freedom is the power that each generation should receive from the previous generation, because it's the mental freedom that has the ability to cause the group or cause the generation to grow and develop as individuals and as a civilization. Without this mental freedom, it's impossible Without the mental freedom, it is impossible for any generation, any group of people, any ethnic group, any racial group, to benefit themselves in terms of their efforts, in terms of their abilities, and in terms of anything they have to offer. It all would be channeled in another direction for another people to use without that freedom. The freedom is what gives each generation, each people, the power to benefit themselves, the power to grow and develop, is that mental freedom. Without it, they are simply tools for the generation who has control over their mind, over their existence. The truth story of the African-American people has to be yet told. I was watching the program just a couple days ago about an African-American school system. Actually, it wasn't a school system. What it was an African-American program of studies that had been put into a school system, a university. And the argument they had was the getting information that was beneficial to the people that was being taught, and that information was being given to them, presented to them by people of their own racial group. This was the idea of the program. But because the program is located in the European American system, school system, it was just too difficult for them to try to achieve that kind of education necessary for the African-American people to grow and develop. The African-American people must grow and develop in a knowledge and concept that's indigenous, that it becomes indigenous to the people of that ethnic group or that racial group. The generations down the line must feel the things they do and say were indigenous to them, that it was natural, it was born in their nature for them to be able to achieve. When a group of people are in the world and they don't feel as though success is indigenous to them, they don't feel that success is automatic for them, then there's something wrong with the process that they are in. Something is wrong with their way of viewing life. Because it's obvious when you study history and you study science, it's obvious that the human being, the man, the human being, male and female, were created to be successful in this physical creation. We've been given all the tools necessary to become a productive creature in this environment. The way our physical body is made, the way our mind is made, everything about the human being dictates success. It doesn't just suggest success, it dictates success, and is a very, very powerful situation that has to happen to prevent the human being from being successful. There's something very powerful that would change the direction, the flow of success for the human being, and especially when you're talking about a racial group. For a racial group not to be successful in a monetarily or educationally or scientifically to be successful in a, we would look at it as a racial group that has not yet reached this peak, has not yet reached this potential. And we look at it that way because of their ability or inability to be successful as they can be based on the human. When we look at that as a outline and a blueprint, we can see that something has changed the trajectory for many people on the earth based on that analysis. And most scientists will come away with that analysis that the human being was created to be successful. And those of you who have a background in religion, especially that in Islam, when you study Quran and you study the examples and the terminology that's used in the Quran to talk about the human being, when he calls the human being the Khalifa. Just by that term alone, it the creator cannot be looked upon as one who is a, is guessing, one who guesses. If it's human, then you're going to do some guessing. If it doesn't have the creative ability to create something from nothing, then it has to guess and figure out how to get something done, like the human being. But most of the people of the Abrahamic faith believe that the creator creates on the basis of taking nothing and bringing something to existence exactly as it is intended to be brought into existence by the creator. With that logic, then that tells us, especially those who read the understanding of the Arabic, when he says Khalifa, the term Khalifa automatically means, let's say the term Khalifa means one who can cultivate, one who can develop, one who can could do a form of creating by bringing a system that already exists in another position, bring it to a different position. He has that power, has the power to change the structure of the physical world. Now, just that alone, a person who speaks Arabic, a person who reads the Quran, has to come to a conclusion that in order for this term to be used, in order for this term to be used to define the human existence or human being, the term Khalifa, that term has to suggest that success is natural within that creature. The success of is natural within that creature, or it could not be able to be called the Khalifa. Khalifa is one who cultivates, one who changes, one who brings into existence. Now, this same concept is also found in the Bible, too. It is not just restricted. Restricted information is found in the early texts of the Torah, that the creature that God created, he was above the angels. He had a ability that the angels did not have. He had the ability to change things. He had the ability to say no. He had the ability to say no and make another decision, whereas the angels, according to all the scriptures, didn't have that power. The angels didn't have that power to say no, other than one that they call Iblis, one they call Lucifer in the script in the Bible. Lucifer was given that power to say no, to make a decision, to obey or not obey. But the human being, according to all of the scriptures, the human being has the power even above Lucifer, even above Shaitan, even above the jinn nature that they talk about in scripture. Because the human being can also say no. He can say no to the jinn. He can say no to Shaitan. He can say no to Satan. He can say no to the devil. So the human being's power is over any angelic position that one might try to bring into play as to why people can't be successful in this physical world. That is a weak position, to think that the human being wasn't created to be successful, to think that the human being was not created to be successful in this creation, the one we're in. The human being nature is the nature to create, the nature to be industrious. And those of you who have listened to the teachings and understanding of Imam Wafdeen Muhammad, you know that he said the first nature expressed by the human being was industrious. Even before he starts thinking about God and even before he starts thinking about religion, his first development was industrious. So that tells us that the human being's nature is to be successful. Now, when you find a situation where the human being is not being successful, and then again, it depends on who's doing the evaluating of those people. Who's doing the evaluating? You may go into the Andes, or you may go into an area where they have native people who are native to that land and have been living that way for thousands of years. You may say they're not successful. You see, that's on your evaluation of what you consider is success. They were given the tools that are necessary for them to be successful in that environment. the human being. They're human beings who are successful in that environment, whether it be a jungle environment, whether it be a environment of wild animals. It doesn't make any difference because the human being comes out on top, comes out on top. We know the human being may not do the same thing in every environment to that we would call from our position success, but we only talk about success from our position. But the human being was created to be successful in any situation on the earth, successful any situation. This is one of the reasons the human being tried to build machines to go underwater, to go under the water, and now they're talking about living under the water, to go up in the air, and now they talk about space stations in the air. That's the power of the human being, the mind. The human being has this intellect that's so powerful that it changes the physical creation. It changes the physical creation. Once we get a grasp of the power of the human being and our nature, and that does, it is required that we have some understanding of what the Creator, the power of the Creator, because Creator is the architect of the human being. Once we can grasp that nature, then we can begin to build, even from our present positions as African Americans in America, after suffering 300-400 years of slavery and after the tricks that were played on the African people, after all of those things that we see, that you want to talk about the lynchings or the miseducation of the Negro kind of concept, whatever we see, then if we understand the nature of the human being and of the human being created that human being to have the nature to be successful. Once we see that, once we really understand that, then we can strive in a way to overcome any of the obstacles that the European American has put in front of the African people to misdirect them, to get them to be less productive for themselves and more productive in a slave capacity, whether it be mental or physical, for the European, and the European American specifically. Now, this is probably one of the most important aspects when we start looking at the African American people. Why is it the African American people can't make the progress necessary that we don't have to complain about our existence in America, and for that matter, the existence of the African throughout the world? What is it about the European that the African cannot overcome, and the European is able to keep the African in a servant position, a position of being subordinate to the European? Well, what is it? Now, we know that there are many, many suggestions that are made, but we must get to the first question. The first question, and especially the first question for tonight, is why can't the African American people unite or collaborate for their own benefit? Now, that may seem a little sophisticated in some ways, and may not, that question, but that's a deep, deep question. The question goes deep into our position now in America, and it goes deep into our existence, whether we even be in existence in the future. Why is it? Why is it that the African American people can't unite or collaborate for their benefit? you find that Europeans the world over, they unite easily in a way to gain precedence over someone else. Now, when I say easily, I don't mean they don't argue and fight and fuss with one another. That's not what I mean by easily. What I mean by after all of the dust is settled, once the dust is settled, they understand to come to the table and put the scheme together as to how they can achieve what they're trying to achieve. That's the power of collaboration. That's the power of being able to collaborate with one another, even if we disagree with one another to start out. We can collaborate enough to come to some conclusions that's going to benefit the whole situation. That's the power. That's the power of progress within a people. If a people, whether of the same race or not, if they don't have the power to collaborate and come to the conclusion in that system of collaboration that's going to help benefit the whole, then they're going to be forever in that position until they become extinct. And there's been some great civilizations on this planet before who were great. The Incas were in South America. The Incas had over 40 million people, and they built great monuments. And then we would measure their intelligence compared to the day we would say they were scholars. They had invented calendars and mathematics. And of course, the Aztecs in Mexico. All these people had great civilizations. And these great civilizations, when they ran into a conflict that was a situation that was conflicting with their way of life and the way of life that was being brought in by another civilization. That how they adjusted to that conflict was the reason for their extinction. They did not adjust well to the conflict of the Spaniards coming into North America. They didn't adjust well to the lies and deceit that they brought with them, the diseases they brought with them. They didn't adjust well. They didn't adjust well to the actions that the European American were doing to place the Native American in a condition that they could never evolve out of. They didn't adjust well. Now that might sound a little cold in a way, but it is the truth. They did not adjust well situation that was presented to their people by another people. Had they had the power of collaborating with one another in its initial stages, there's a possibility that they may have gotten a whole different direction on which to travel with their lives. And one of those directions would have been not to let the European in the country. They could have done that. They didn't have to allow the European. It was only a few of them. When the Europeans first landed in America, there were thousands of Native Americans. Over 65 million Native Americans were here in America. And you had Europeans, what they had, 40, 50 people on a boat? Maybe 200 people. That was a lot. But yet they were able to manipulate their minds and the conditions of the thinking of the people who were here, the Native Americans were here, to the degree that the European American was able to come into the country, establish himself, and then take over the country, and now the people that he took the country from are extinct. Why? Because of the inability of the indigenous people to collaborate with one another, to collaborate, to come to some reasonable understanding as to what they could do for their survival. They didn't see a threat of their survival. So they treated that as something impossible. And many of them didn't even, not only didn't see it or relate to it, they didn't have a way of really defining it. And then the same European took the country and land began to build on the land, made a permanent home here, and then took all the goods and the qualities out of the land and took it back to Europe. And they used a system to do that, and the system they used was the slave system. Now, that might sound cold and that might sound a little harsh, but it's a reality. Now, why it's so important for us to understand the reality is understand what is going on in our lives as African Americans. And we don't understand that because we don't really see what the European has been doing over the years of his what we call not collaboration, but his socialization and his civilizing, what he calls civilizing, his colonizing of the world. He was in the process of colonizing. He used the same psychology on the African in Africa to get the Africans to sell their own brothers into this system that they were already doing this kind of thing anyhow. They had slavery all over the world before the European even got an inkling on how to use human capital, the human being. But the problem exists still. The same problem that the people of old had exists today. The inability of the people who are being threatened, the inability of inability they have, or I don't want to say inability because it's not natural, but let's say that what they had, the inability that they forced on themselves not to be able to collaborate, is the same thing that the Native American had when the European was taking the country from them. Collaboration is the key. Collaboration is the key on how we come to a meaningful conclusion on to how to do what is best for our people. And if we don't have that power to collaborate with one another, then we could never be able to come to a conclusion, a just conclusion, that would benefit our people. Every conclusion we will come to without the power of collaboration is a conclusion that leads to our conclusion. And I mean by that our extinction. There's nothing in the Europeans' plan that talks about the African evolving to the same level as the European with the same amount of independence. There's nothing in his program to suggest that. When the African Americans first started developing in America, even after the slavery, even after all of that, during that particular time, the history shows, the evidence shows, that the African American people began to develop in America. They were developing in America because the European made a mistake. He made several mistakes, but two main mistakes he made with the African. One, he made the mistake of segregating the African, bringing about segregation, the Jim Crow system. That was a mistake by the European American. That was a mistake. They realized it and corrected it afterward, but it was a mistake. It was a mistake for the European American to leave the African alone in the Sea Islands and in Georgia and South Carolina. But they couldn't help that because where they had these great rice farms down in the Sea Islands and in Georgia and South Carolina, they also had this disease called malaria. And malaria was carried by mosquitoes, and it started in June and didn't end until October of the year. 6 months out of each year, this occurred. Europeans could not live in an infested area that had malaria because they had no immunity to it. But the Africans had immunity to it because we had developed this immunity to malaria when we was in Africa, and it didn't all get all out of our system, our what they call the sickle cell. There's a sickle cell in the blood of the African-American people that takes out the malaria germ out of the body, and only the thing the human that the African would get, maybe a cold or something of that nature. But to be fatal is not a very common thing, although there have been some that die from, the same as people die from pneumonia, die from common colds. But because of that, the Africans were able to be alone in the Sea Islands, in South Carolina and Georgia, for 6 months out of each year. And during that particular time, they began to build what is essential for the survival and progression of a people, that they were beginning to lay the foundation of a culture. They were laying the foundations of a brand new culture that never existed before. And it was, and biologically, they had the biological heritage of the different tribes that came were brought into America from the west coast of Africa. Then they also mixed with the Native American who came from Africa at a particular different time. They mixed with them sexually. They mixed with the Europeans sexually, many of them from Scotland and northern England. All of that mixture created the conditions of the African, changed the African from a Nigerian or a Senegalese, changed him from that into this new people. This new existence of a people. And our people were smart enough at that particular time, and there's another process that took place with breeding during that same period. That also contributed to the biological makeup of the African American. But during that same time, the Africans were wise enough to begin to form this culture. And we see evidence of it. We see evidence because they created a language. They created a language of their own out of the English language. They took the English language and broke it up into parts enough that they could only be the only ones who understood it, whereas even a person who spoke English wouldn't be able to understand it, even though it sounded like English. And that language is called Geechee. They call it the Geechee language because most of the people live down there by the Geechee, the Ogeechee River. Ogeechee River is a river that ran through Georgia, that where most of them lived at that time. And so they just took that name, as they did with most of the words in English, and changed it to something they could understand that that the European didn't understand. So the language is called Geechee. The people were called Geechee. And then they added Ogeechee to it because not Ogeechee, but they added Gullah Geechee. Some scientists believe that was the religious aspect of the group of people. You know, 15 to 20% of them were Muslim, had the Islamic background from over in Africa, and many of them said that when they called the word of God, the word for God for them was Allah. So in order to conceal the name Allah, many of them started using Gullah. They knew what they were talking about, but the European wouldn't know what they were talking about. So when they said Gullah Geechee, they were saying that they are a new people, and they believed in God, and their language was this language that they were speaking. Now that language is taught now in Harvard University in the African-American study courses, and the European... It says that in their breakdown of what a language is it's a language. Although Lorenzo, African-American, in the 1930s deemed it that, and it's in this Schomburg Museum, that this language, Geechee, is a real language. It's not any of the other languages, like Creole. It's not Creole, and it's not Ebonics didn't even exist at that time. In fact, they weren't even in California. California didn't exist as far as the people were concerned so at the time of the formation of this language. And is not a Jamaican language. It's separate. It has an English base. It has an English base. And they corrupted the same as the Jew corrupted the word, the German language. They corrupted the word, the German language, when they was in Germany to become Yiddish, the language they speak now. They speak Yiddish and Hebrew. From that situation, did the same thing the African slaves did in America. So what they were doing, what the Africans were doing, they understood the power of culture. They understood that if a people is going to survive, they have to have a cultural base to survive. Their cultural base will help them to give later playing field for them to collaborate with one another, because they would have this in common. Even though their skin complexion, their hair textures were different, because we were a mixed people now. Some of us looked like we were European, and some of us looked as dark as any African, and some of us looked like the Native American. But that's what made up the African-American people. And they came together on that basis. That was the first time we could see in history where the African was beginning to build a sound foundation for a culture. A sound foundation for a culture. And we see more evidence took place about in 1783, when the Africans fought against the King of Great Britain with the Patriots, some of the Patriots, to liberate themselves from Great Britain. And at that particular time, when the colonists and the African won that privilege, that won the war, the Revolutionary War, they all were called American. So the African took on that same, and we have documents that show that the African took on the name of African American at that particular time to signify their freedom from the rest of the world, to signify that they had just won their independence from Great Britain, which is another very important part to the development of our culture, to the development of the African-American culture. Is a very important piece. But we need to understand it, not just say the words and say, well, we're African-American, we're black, we just, that's just saying the words, but you need to know why. You need to know the history. This was the purpose of the Geechee, of the griots in Africa. They would carry the knowledge of the people from one generation to the next, educate the people of the past generation so that culture can stay united. The African was laying the foundation for the culture. They were building the new Africa in America. They were building the same thing that the Germans did when the Germans came to America. You have out in the west part of America now, whole German almost towns and villages, and they're all over the place. Then you have the Chinese. Chinatown. You have the Italians with Little Italy's and all those kinds. But everyone who came to America wanted to bring part of their culture with them to establish themselves in this land of freedom. So it was common, it's common, and it's understandable that the African did the same thing. The African wanted to establish a new Africa here in America, like a New York City, like a New England, the same as all of those other people were doing. And they had the foundation laid, they had the language laid. They had the identity laid, cultural identity, African-American laid in 1783 was when they first started using that term, and we have that documented also. The reason a European doesn't stress that, because then he is saying that the African is independent as he is. The African is just as much of a citizen of America as he is. They kept that quiet for hundreds of years just so they could misuse the African. It can keep the African people in a state of slavery, even after they had won their freedom from Great Britain, if the African didn't really understand that they fought for that right to be free. And they were free. The forefathers, our parents, our ancestors knew that. Our ancestors were laying the foundation for a culture. What is indigenous to all human beings is the nature of culture. If people is separated from the culture from which they were born, they lose the strength of collaboration, because they have no foundation on which to collaborate with one another. They have no foundation on which to begin to develop between dealing with one another. They have no way of collaborating without the culture. And if you, and to the answer to the question we're looking at this evening, this, why can the African-American people unite or collaborate? Is the answer is simple. Hard to find, because it's right in front of us, but it's simple. Is the embracing of our culture, culture that our forefathers established in America. Not going back to Africa and going to the pyramids to try to see what part of Egypt we come from. Not that. We know everybody had that situation. That's different. That's earlier. Our people were formed from that at a different situation, in a different country, in a different biological makeup. It's more of a mixture. Even those, the people in the other countries, other part of the world, when you look at them, they claim a culture. The Nigerians claim a culture. The Ghanese claim a culture. All of them claim a culture. They don't claim Africa as their culture. They claim a culture of the country they come from, and then break it even down to the greater degree. They even go in a tribal understanding. They say their tribal knowledge takes precedence over any other kind of belief systems that are in the country, because they understand the power of culture. They understand that culture is what keeps the people together, and without it, the people are apart, whether the people are aware of it or not. The African-Americans are in America, they are totally unaware that they're not part of a culture. They think they think their culture is breakdancing. Culture is rap music. They think their culture is shaking their booties in front of the camera. That's what they think their culture is, because that's what they have been given by the European Americans. That will not free the mind and the mental state of the African-American people. It will keep them enslaved. It will keep the African-American people enslaved to their emotions. It will keep the African-American people in a condition that could be manipulated, used, just throw a couple of dollars into them. They'll do anything. They'll sell their soul for the money. Tell them they're going to be famous. They'll do anything, because they have no foundation. And that foundation was being built by their foreparents. It was being built by their foreparents. And the reason we know that, when we study history again, we see that we mentioned a little earlier, and we're going to take a break too and take some questions, and then we're going to have a break. But I want to really just mention this before we do the break, before we have a break, that the African, to show the power of this cultural development of the African when he was in America, brought to America or came to America, and when they won their independence against Great Britain, they became African Americans. To show the power that they were having immediately after, and somewhat before, the Civil War, which was another war. It wasn't about freeing the African. We won't deal a lot with that tonight, but it's not about freeing the African at all. It was about money. That should suffice, that money and power. But they, after that, the African beginning to put together their culture. They were beginning to set up towns like Wilmington, North Carolina, and other places. And the European made a mistake. The European-American made a mistake. There's a situation that took place in one of the train companies that had a real form of segregation, because it wasn't legal at that time, but they had a system by which European Americans would ride on one part of the train and Africans would ride on another part. They had that going on. So one of the Africans didn't want to go along with that. He sat where he wanted to sit. And then what happened was that the train company was going to throw him out. He sued and so forth and went to court. And then it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court in 1897 said that segregation was constitutional. They said segregation was constitutional. Now that was what was the basis of the Jim Crow beginning. But now they don't tell you this in the history books. They tell you about that situation, but they don't tell you what a big mistake the European made when he did that. When they did that, they made a huge mistake. But it was a paradox kind of situation. It was beneficial to the African American. It didn't benefit the European, but it benefited the African American. We were nowhere near as wealthy, as strong, and as powerful before 1897, as we were after the Supreme Court ruled that segregation was constitutional. When they said that, it allowed the European people to legally bar the African from being part of their development. The African just wanted to develop in America, African American. But what it did, when the African American realized that they could not go in certain restaurants and all other kind of public accommodations, they began to build their own. They began to build their own towns. They began to build towns. You heard the term Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. All that came after that. That came after that ruling. Durham, North Carolina, was also a black capital. Richmond, Virginia. They had developed over 60 towns in Oklahoma alone, chartered here in New Jersey, alongside New Jersey, chartered by African Americans, still pretty much 90% African American. They did it in Florida. You go in some towns in Florida, they were owned and owned today even by African Americans. And what the African Americans did after that ruling, and we're talking after that ruling, there was a book written in 1932 that showed that the African American people had made more progress and as much progress toward independence as any nation would have done toward self-sufficiency in that situation. Now, this was all during the Jim Crow era. You see, they don't tell the Africans that. They don't tell you that because it makes you, it will see, African would just naturally see the power of collaboration, because the Africans were forced to collaborate because the European American wouldn't allow them in certain places or make them drink at different fountains, wouldn't let them ride on certain trains. And Africans also were building trains at that time. They were setting up their own trains. Then they were building cars at that time. Patterson had developed the car, and at the same time that Ford put his car on the line, Patterson was an African-American who had their own car development, totally a car for about $600. during that particular time, during what they call the Jim Crow era. Now, if you just use a little bit of your own thinking, just a little bit, if everyone would just think a little bit, they would say, wow, we are better off collaborating with one another than we are going for this stuff that the Europeans are putting down, telling us that people of color and all of that. They have our young people thinking girls trying to be men and women, men trying to be women and all those kinds of things. All that stuff came in not during segregation. That didn't come in during that time. The African-American men knew who they were. Women knew who they were, and they all were making advances in terms of progress, in terms of financial, educational. All of that was happening. Not until they recognized, the European-American recognized the mistake they made. Because they had not recognized that, the African-American people were growing faster than any other ethnic group in the world, in America especially. They were outgrowing the Germans. They were outgrowing the Chinese. They were outgrowing all of them. Gaining, had more land, more towns, everything broken, built up by Africans, African-Americans. Because of that one power, that power of collaboration. And collaboration becomes easier when people embracing their own culture. It is very difficult to collaborate when you don't have a foundation of similarity. You don't have a foundation of commonality. It's very hard to collaborate. You have to jump over bounds and go out of your logic to collaborate when you don't have those foundations in place. The European American knows this. This is why they took over the education of the African-American people and begin to educate them themselves, not let the African-American people educate themselves into this knowledge, but had the African-American people being educated by European social systems. And when you look at how easy it becomes to answer the question, the question we're looking at tonight, why the African people can't unite or collaborate, is easy. We have not embraced our culture. We have taken on ideas and concepts that they've been feeding us. They want to tell us we come from Egypt. They want to tell us we all are Moors. And some of our people probably were, but we all weren't the same. African Americans are just not the same. You can't take the African American people and just put them down in part of Africa and say they all came from that spot. That's not true. We were made here in America. We formed here in America. We came together here in America. Other than the Native American, and that's only reason I say Native American because he was here before the European. Other than the Native American, we are the real American. And we're more American than the Native American because the Native American, we show a history that they came out of Africa by migrating. They weren't forced into this land. They migrated from parts of Africa up through South America and all through this land, and they also migrated over the Iberian Straits, coming over Russia, coming out of that part of China, all of that area up there. It took hundreds of years and thousands of years to do it, but they show that they came into America on their own. It took many years, but the African is the only one in America that this history shows that we didn't come here on our own. Some of us did, but the majority of us came through the system that the European was using to build Europe up. And from that, we begin to grow and develop into a people, a new people. And now we are the largest group of people in America that we could call a racial group. There's about 42 million African Americans. And the next group is the German American, and they're about 40 million. Then it goes on down the list. And we need to stop being manipulated by the European American, this funny idea about Spanish American. No such thing as Spanish American. There's no such thing as Spanish. No such thing as Hispanic, no such thing as Latino. They made up all of those schemes to mislead African people. Latino, where does a Latino come from? There's no country called Latino. There's no country called Hispanic. No such thing as that. It's made up. It's a linguistic group, and then they put together an idea about Latin language. If there's the Latin language that we make believe, that's a group, just to outnumber or make the African-American people feel inferior, to make the African-American people feel as though they're not the superior, that we're a minority. And they use the term minority all the time with African-American because the psychological imprint that it makes on the mind of the African-American people. We have to reverse the process. And we can't reverse the process until we begin to accept and embrace our culture. We have to learn what the messages that our parents, our grandparents were leaving. We have to learn them. Even if we don't learn to speak the Gullah Geechee language, we should learn to respect it and know that that's what our foreparents spoke. Spoke it out of necessity because they had to come up with a way of communicating with one another that the European slave master couldn't understand in order for them to be able to escape out of those plantations and build other civilizations that, like down in Fort Moose in Florida. That was by the Africans. We've been going quite a while here. I want two things. Well, first we want to take a break. Then we want our guests to push the ones on their phone so I would know the guests are here. And for them to, because the next part of the show, they're going to be talking about this history and about that particular aspect dealing with jazz. And then meanwhile, those of you who have questions or comments, you can push the one on your phone now. Then after we finish with the question and answers or comments, if you have any, then we're going to go to a break. So those of you who have any questions or comments, and please be as precise as possible. I don't see any. Okay. All right. We're gonna move into the. If you have it, when we come back off a break, we'll still deal with some questions and answers. Let's take a break here.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, okay, we're back. If any of you have any questions or comments, please push the one on your phone, and you can come in and ask the questions. Tonight, our subject is a question we presented to the audience. The first question tonight was, why can't the African people unite or collaborate for their own benefit? I don't know if this is one of our guests or if it's a question. Area code 636. Area code
36. Yes,
area code 636.
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. Ramadan, Mubarak to you, my beloved brother. Praise be to Allah. And you're asking a good question, for real. Why? Why can't we collaborate? Why can't we come together and plan our future instead of someone else planning our future for us? You know, when we look at the plight of the indigenous people on this continent, they were warring against each other. Tribes were warring against each other. The Iroquois, the Chiricahua, they were warring against each other. And they didn't stop even with the coming of the Europeans. They continually warred among themselves. And the European exploited that. He exploited that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in the late 1870s. It may have been. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on the date. But it was too late then. There was an effort to unite all of the indigenous tribes. But by that time, it was too late. We hear, the European kidnapped us from Africa. No way. No, they didn't. Them little frail people could not do what was done on their own. The Africans were warned tribes. Tribalism was warned among themselves, and they had captives, and slavery, was a universal practice, but not the type of slavery that we went through, and erasing people. So, no, the Europeans didn't kidnap us. We were too busy warring among ourselves, and when it became too late, the European got the land. He got us. You start hearing about African unity. So the same way here at this time, you ask how come we cannot collaborate? Because whether we realize it or not, we have a silent war among each other. Classism. Mm-hmm. Colorism, financialism, regionalism. I'm from New York. You're from California. I don't like you. But all of these divisions, because we are too busy warring among ourselves, and that is happening now. I won't even go into give the many examples. I'm quite sure you're aware of the many examples. That's why we cannot collaborate, my brother. Stop right there. Lovely. Thank you. This is a wonderful broadcast. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Thank you, brother, because that's so true that we are in that condition. That's a formula that the European found out. If you could divide the people, You can win anything they own. You can keep them in slavery. If you can divide them from amongst themselves, if you can get them fighting against each other, you can do it. What the European did to help themselves from being able to fall into that same trap, is they put together treaties and things of that nature. You ever hear the term about honor amongst thieves? They have to do that in order for them to exist. They have to be honorable to one another. They have to say, look, okay, we're going to rob and kill everything, but we got to make sure between each other we be fair. We can't do certain things. And then that bond, it causes a people to stay together when they commit themselves to each other like that. And what people do, and that is a natural process, and that natural process is called culture. People form a culture. Within a culture, they form a culture within a culture to make sure that they can be able to be successful. They have to form, they have to understand what each is talking about. They have to understand each goal and things of that nature. The European knows this science, and what they have done, they have come into the areas and broke up these cultures. They knew that the Africans weren't together. They knew that the Africans were fighting one another. They promoted it. And get to the bigger makers of guns are Europeans. Who sell most guns? Europeans. They sell on both sides.
Who sells whiskey?
They invented that. They didn't invent whiskey, but whiskey became a very part for their culture because Europe is also a cold land, and alcohol helps keep their bodies warm. It keeps their blood warm. It keeps them from realizing how cold and wet it is up there all the time. But it's not something that human beings should be just taking in just ordinarily, you know, just in a way that it becomes second nature to the human being. And it's what they use to give to the Native American, because the Native American was unaware of the power of it, and they thought they was doing something good for themselves when he was already into this spirituality, this kind of thing of spirits and seeing, well, one might call them ghosts or seeing images. But they was already into that, and alcohol promoted that behavior. So they became alcoholics very quickly, very easily, because they thought it was a benefit to them. Imam Muhammad explained that and broke it down clearly, how that happened to the Native American. But you're absolutely correct, and what we have to see the logic of this. We have to see what is happening. If that's the problem, if collaboration is a problem, and then can't be our stock, it can't be our stock position on what religion we are. It can't be our stock position on what political party we are. It can't be a stock position on how much money we have. We can't take a position that only my side wins. Only my side is good. Once we take that position, we lose the ability to collaborate. The one thing to keep all of that together, that a person doesn't have to change their religion, doesn't have to change their goals and objectives for making money, is the culture. The culture. The culture gives the power of being individual, and gives people the power of having different opinions. But they always use the culture as a foundation on which to go back on, which to go back to. And that ability to do that is will cause them to grow, will cause them to come together, make decisions for the benefit of the whole. Our cultures were taken from us. We won't stay taken from us. I know people like to use that idea that cultures were taken from us. But we didn't have a united culture when we were brought to America. Africans didn't have a united culture. Africans had different cultures from whatever tribe they came from. But what was prevented, what the European was trying to prevent, they were trying to prevent the Africans from forming another culture in America, forming a culture that benefit Africans and may or may not benefit Europeans. They didn't want to take that chance. So they were more about destroying all forms of communications that the Africans have with each other that would cause them to come together, and indoctrinating them in Europeans' way of life, European style of life, European thinking. They felt as though by doing that, they would have a slave for an eternity, and it would have had not been for other measures. But the point is that our people were hip to it, and Allah blessed our people to be able to see through that, and they came together. We have the name of one of the Wiccans who went by the name of Jimmy. We're not spelled the same way that Jimmy is spelled in English, but it sounds the same. And they encourage the people to get the same language, to start speaking the same language so they can understand one another. That's where the language Geechee comes from. And so they can learn how to talk to each other in front of the European, and the European never understand what they're saying, but they would understand each other. And they formed that language from the English so the European wouldn't think it's a different communication that they was using. They would just think the African was speaking bad English. They would say, oh, they're uneducated. They're not educated in our schools, so they don't know how to talk. See, but they were totally wrong, because the Africans could write, read and write. And we have proof of that, because on the back of some of the pews in the churches of that time, we have the Africans were writing. They had the Arabic writing and so forth and so on, because they had, and many people see that. But, you know, our people have been so inundated by this European way of educating us that we don't see it in front of us. We don't see the logic that's in front of us. We don't see the plain English that's in front of us, because we're waiting for the European to say it's okay to drink, it's okay to eat, it's okay to do this, it's okay. We're waiting for the okay from the European people. They've conditioned us to do that. They've conditioned us to wait till they give the okay. You know, whatever you guys come up with is okay, as long as you get, let us tell you it's okay. If we don't say it's okay, don't do it. That's the way the European American has the African American. And if the African American can get to the point where we can make our own decisions and trust them and trust logic with each other, then we can make a lot of progress. We've already proved that we can make progress. Our people, during the Jim Crow era, as I said earlier, if we had stayed in that system, the system of segregation, and that's when the European also found out they made another mistake. If they measured, from where we started to where they saw us in the 1930-32, if we had stayed in that system, we already the 11th richest country in the world, in the present system we are now, the system that we don't own any wealth in America. We own very little. Staying in that system, we had, in 1932, we had over 134 banks. We have maybe 30-some banks today, but 134 banks. We had railroad stations, telephone companies, automobiles. We was developing automobile factories, railroad. I know some of you have read where over 6 millionaires that we know about that had their own airplanes, independent airplanes. Now there's probably much more than that. This is what we get in the history. This is much we can dig up from the Europeans' history that we're exposed to. You can go to your own computer or longhand yourself and sit down and take the mathematics. Look at the position of America in 1897 and the position of the African American in 1897, economically speaking, economically, socially, educationally, scientifically, all of those. And then look at the progress that was made from that time until 1932, just that alone. And then look at what the progress that America has made from 1932 to the present day, you will find that the African-American progress has outperformed even America's progress if we had remained in that system of segregation. Just based on the science, I know a lot of African-Americans will say, I can't live without being with white people, or they use the term white, the European, and it is mentally a struggle that the European Americans has put into the African Americans' mind. They don't believe it. And because of that, even if they got different religions, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make any difference. Religion is not what people think it is. Religion is a way of influence. It influences whatever system it comes into, whatever system adopts it. It influences that system to be better. That's the idea of religion, to make something better, people will be more on a right than on a negative side of life. People will be more encouraged to be morally strong than to be immoral. I guess you would look at that, but it's the biggest form of influence in human existence. Human existence can't find any other system that influences a culture or society more than religion. Religion has that power. It has the power because it teaches belief system. It teaches to believe. And once a person believes, then they act according to that belief. But we should not misinterpret that for culture. Religion is part of culture. Every culture has religion in it to help influence that culture, to keep that culture going in a certain way. The culture is what the Creator put in this creation for all social systems, all human beings, to be able to get along, to be able to get along first as a family, then as a community, and then as a society. The culture is what does that. And we have to begin to embrace our culture, even if we're Baptist, Methodist, Jew, the black Israelites, Muslim, doesn't make any difference. We're going to have to embrace our culture. Once we do that, that don't mean we have to give up our religion. It doesn't mean we have to give up the way we even serve God, because most of the people, we have to give them the benefit of the doubt that they believe they're serving God, the same Creator that we all serve. But in order to collaborate, these ultimatums in front of each other say, if you don't bow down the way I bow down, we can't do business together. If you don't move the way I move, you can't teach together. We have to get beyond that. We have to recognize that we come from the same evolutionary pattern that every culture comes through, and you work those other things out. You work, the whole idea about what we can't get along will be worked out. It's going to be worked out. If we can maintain our cultural identity, and fortunately for many of you who follow the teachings of Imam Muhammad, you know that he said, brother, don't forget your culture. We must have our cultural identity. He was looking at the seriousness of this situation with culture. We can't be so afraid of developing our own culture that we go to this kind of concept that we all are one Afrocentric kind of culture. No, that's not the way it is. Africans don't even think like that. We shouldn't think like that. Africans don't think like that. They know they got different countries. They know they got different cultures in those countries. They know all of that. Sure, it makes sense for everybody to get together if we're trying to vote somebody in an office for a particular kind of government. That's a different issue. But they're trying to bring about the impossible, and I believe that I'm waiting really for our guests. And if any of our guests have come into, if you dialed in, please push the one on your phone, because I can't see any other way that you're in. And I'm going to open up a couple of lines of people who have pushed the one. And if you're one of the guests, just let me know. If you're not, you can if you have a comment or question, you still can do that. But I want to make sure we get our guests on. Area code 917. Area code 917.
Yes.
This is Kim?
Yes.
Kim Austin? Oh,
can you hear me?
All right, hold on. Yes, I can hear you now. Hold 1 minute. Let me check this other one. I want to see if we got... See if we have Imani here. Area code 7. Huh?
She's coming on at 6:30. She's not coming on now.
Okay.
She's coming on at 6:30.
Oh, okay. That's a C. Okay. Well, 7. We have 727. Area code 727. You have a question or comment?
Well, Blessing Ramadan, no, your guest got the priority.
No, guest going to come on at 6:30. You ask a question.
Oh, okay. 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 Then, you know, we know we can agree upon the fact that the entertainment, the corrupt entertainment culture is what has our people and also America. So how are we going to work through that as far as advancing ourselves as period?
Okay. Good question. That's why it's important that we embrace our culture, the one that our foreparents started to lay. They already established the foundation for it. We just have to embrace it and build on it. This is not an easy process. What we're in is not an easy process. It's a difficult process because we're in the middle of it. We are a culture evolving, which means that somebody could come in with a whole new kind of thing and throw us off base altogether. They do it all the time when they tell us things like we are people of color. And at the same time, which is a racist statement in the first place, but they say it in such a way that people don't realize that is a racist statement. If we people of color, then who are you? See, nobody asked that question. You say we people of color, then who are you? See, he's saying automatically, okay, you're different than I am. I'm better than you. And see, it's a racist statement. We have to get to the point where we can overlook those kind of situations.
So it'd be best if we go back to our human culture that God established.
Well, there's no such
right?
thing as that. But there's just no such thing as that. A lot of noise in the background. There's a lot of noise in the background. I don't know if it's your phone or someone else. At any rate, there's no such thing as human culture. The human being
is
just a human being.
I think that would be more effective than any kind of ancestral culture that would come in. The human culture should be the main factor to bring the unification of all people.
Just a rehearsal.
Okay, I understand your point, but what I'm saying,
yes.
There's no evidence of that, and there's no such thing as a human culture. The human being.
Oh yes,
we are human beings.
Hold on, come on. I'm okay. You know what it is? I'm just going to back up off of that because you are totally incorrect. But I'm going to have to back up off. I'm going to listen to the show.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah,
we have one of our guests here. I know we do. And we still – thank you very much, brother. I want a guest to get ready. Is Imani, are you here?
All right.
She's not here yet. Okay. But so Kim Austin.
I was going to go first, and then she was going to come on.
Okay. Well, let's do it that way.
Okay.
This is Kim.
This is
you talking?
Kim. Yes.
Okay. All right, Kim, I'm going to give you a few seconds to get yourself together. We'll run a quick ad, and you can organize everything you need and get ready for come on, wrap this advertisement.
Assalamu alaikum, and thank you for supporting the CWSC AM 360 annual Ramadan Telethon, which helps us financially secure our intelligentsia operations. And some of those operations are as follows. The American Muslim 360 Broadcasting Network, Speakers Bureau, Online National Resource Directory, Volunteer Human Resource Network, The Think Tank, College Scholarship Program, Teams, working together, such as with the Learning Lab, Intrafaith and Interfaith Collaborative, Internship and Leadership Development Programs, Ambassador Programs, and International Collaboratives. Please visit us online to see more of the intelligentsia and the annual report. For your mailing in your donation, you can send it to CWSC Inc., Marina Village, 4905 34th Street South, number 185, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33711-4511. Make your check or money order payable to CWSC, Inc. Thank you, and stay tuned for more information on the Ramadan Telethon.
We want to continue on now. We want to, Kim, are you still with us? Okay. We need Kim or Imani. Push the one on your phone. we have area code 347. Is that you, Kim? 347.
Okay, this is Imani. Can you hear me?
Imani, okay. Yeah, we had Kim on there a moment ago, and then we went to a commercial, and I think she has to probably push the one on her phone again. All right, Imani.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to give you the opportunity to tell us about what you are doing in this area of dealing with our culture, aspect of our culture. We were talking about culture this evening, and aspect of our culture, music, and specifically jazz. And introduce yourself and give us a little background, and then tell us about the institution that you're working with, that trying to save MANA. Is it MANA? Nah, you're trying to save that NAMA. And so would you please give us some information?
Okay. I'm not sure how much Kim was able to share with you, but my name is Imani Scott.
She didn't have the opportunity to share anything yet. So
you're the first
one listening to. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So I hope she does get to join back in, because Kim is our board chair, and we do a lot of the programming together at the Amsterdam Musical Association. Right, so I'm currently the president of the organization. The organization is historic because it was founded as the first union for Black professional musicians back in 1904, and then they incorporated in 1905, January. And so now it's 119 years of this organization. It's the first of its kind in the USA, and we're based in Harlem, New York. And they purchased the brownstone where we operate out of back in 1922. And so that's where we have, you know, all the programming and, events for the community. Our primary mission is to preserve, you know, music, especially jazz, as our original art form for America and music. And we do feature other genres of music, but that is our, you know, core base. And the many greats came out of the organization, or actually were affiliated with the organization, like Uri Blake, James Reese Europe, Henry Minton, just a whole long list of all of the, you know, who's who's in jazz, because they really started out with, ragtime and other forms that, you know, evolved into many branches of jazz now. And so, we've been in the building 102 years, and we have a great program coming up, you know, really celebrating women in jazz, rhythm and blues, and that's going to be this weekend. Organizations on March 30th and 31st, and that's where a number of women will be portraying many of the great legends like Sarah Vaughan and Irene Reed and Nina Simone and so many that is going to be portrayed between those 2 days. Also, we're going to be honoring Senator Cordell Clear. That's our state senator. She is really strong on arts and culture, and just really good advocate for, you know, our culture just for over the last, as long as I've known her, but even before that, for over maybe 40 years, really on grassroots level, and now she's a state senator. So she's going to be honored at our program on Saturday, as well as Valerie Jo Bradley, who is the president of Save Harlem Now.
she's very dedicated to preserving historical sites and, you know, the legacy of many organizations in Harlem. So pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. That's going to be coming up, you know, Saturday and Sunday. But in addition to that, we have, mm-hmm. like, our jazz nights is we have every fourth Monday, we have jazz. We just had a great program yesterday honoring one of our drummers who made a just recently made a transition, Sam Gresham. You know, but, you know, the musicians and the people who come to the organization becomes like a family in this community, but it really is very special because it's not like just coming to like a bar or club. It's really where there's a connection that happens and, you know, like a family, a home away from home. And so mm-hmm. on Wednesdays, we also have a partnership with Harlem Late Night Jazz, and they are returned because they took a little break for the winter. And so now we are actually back with them for the Wednesday nights from 9 to 1 a.m., and we have Harlem Late Night Jazz featuring some Young Lions as well as the Masters, Jazz Masters. So tomorrow will be Frank Lacy and his quintet. He's an astronomical you know, musician playing horn and sax and trombone and every horn instrument as well as piano. And so, you know, it's just a real great environment. We love when young people do get a chance to come and be a part of the legacy. We're working on developing more classes, and we have piano classes that have started up on Fridays, and, you know, there's drum classes that's going to be taking place even today, every Tuesday. So a lot of programming going on. We're looking to do much more and getting our name really recognized out there in the community, because even though it's been 100 years, there's many that still don't know about the organization. So we're striving to really make sure we can expand the awareness and keep the tradition going, you know, at least for the many more generations mm-hmm. to come.
Well, in terms of you yourself, what made you want to be part of, mm-hmm. your musical career as a child, or you was part of a group, or did you study in school? What got you interested in all of this?
I guess all the above. All mm-hmm. the above. My dad was a real great lover of music in many forms. And before I even got home from the hospital when I was born, he had a piano waiting for me because he just knew I was going to be mm-hmm. a pianist. And so, and he was a musician himself. He played the saxophone, the mm-hmm. banjo, you know, just a few instruments. And he sang, and so did my mother. My mother sang. I didn't really like my mom's voice because she would sing a lot of like an opera kind of style, and I don't know, as a child, I didn't really, you know, gravitate to that.
Right.
I've come to appreciate it now just in terms of the different skill levels with, you know, with the ranges and so forth, and I think that's part of what lent itself to, you know, some of my development. You know, I've been singing since I was they said I was singing before I could really talk and or walk, mm-hmm. you know, so singing has really been part of my natural thing to do. Mm-hmm. I don't think I really realized that I had something special going on there until I was in high school, and some of the real, I mean, they were blowing. And then one day I was singing mm-hmm. something, and one of the guys, he used to sing like Stevie Wonder, right? And he was like, oh my God, you know, and so he made a big deal of my singing, and I was like, really? But what really mm-hmm. made something significant is during high school, I made it to the all-state choir, and I was only one, and I couldn't quite believe that, because there was like the young Jennifer Holliday and all kinds of folks in the school, but that did mm-hmm. give a idea that there was something, you know, significant there. So I've been able to develop that, and we're still working through this organization to, you know, to expand in that way too. So we, I came here.
Okay, if you have any questions for our guests, if any listeners have any questions for our guests, just push the one on your phone, and you could ask a question or make a comment. I don't see any come up yet, but and Kim didn't come back. There she is. Push the one on your phone. We can't bring you in unless you, okay, here's somebody here. This might be Kim here. Area code 616.
Yes. Brother Shahid.
Assalamu
alaikum. Brother Edward.
You calling from Ohio?
Yeah.
It's
a Michigan number.
Okay.
It's a Michigan number, but yeah, I'm calling from Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Imani?
Mm-hmm. I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious because I grew up in Harlem. I'm curious. You said you have a brownstone. Where are you located?
Oh, we're right on what is 107 West 130th Street. And
okay.
That's between Malcolm X Boulevard and Adam Clayton Powell, which is also known as Lenox and 7th Avenue.
Yeah,
there's many who've grown up or, you know, been neighbors to where we are. And, you know, for whatever reason, not realizing that this treasure is still right here in Harlem. So I'm glad that you're tuning in and that now you can't say you don't know. You'll stay in touch with us and hopefully come on by, you know, soon.
Yeah, I want to commend you because Harlem has a rich history of jazz. And, you know, when you mentioned in reference to how you came up, you know, I think that you were seasoned to do what you do now, especially when you are really organizing and putting and have this program together, not only to honor our great musicians, but also to continue to carry on that rich legacy that we had. I remember, I think it was Wilk Chamberlain had a place on 7th, it was 7th Avenue. I used to live 147, Esplanade Garden. So I lived right up basically in that area, right down from Harlem Hospital, above Harlem Hospital.
Too.
Yeah, I lived over in that area. And with Cornell West, he came out of that particular area also. But I wanted to commend you for what you're doing. Because I think that it's very key, it's vital that you are doing that, not only bringing up the real, but holding up the legacy, but you're contributing to the greatness of what we're doing. Because a lot of times people say, well, they're stealing our music, you know. But I wouldn't say that, you know. I wouldn't say no one's stealing the music. It's just that what we have, you know, a lot of people want. But people like yourself, and especially African-American people like yourself who are coming up and preserving that to ensure, you know, that our young people understand that legacy and to continue. So I want to commend you on that. And thank you so much for what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, it's teamwork makes the dream. Oh, excuse me. Teamwork makes the dream work. It takes a village, you know. So I'm just continuing on, you know. In fact, we were honored amongst many on Sunday at a program at the Harlem Hospital. When you get a chance, do go by, because they just installed a magnificent display of, it's called Harlem Is, and it's Harlem Is Theater, Harlem Is Dance, and Harlem Is Music. So under that umbrella of music, New Amsterdam Musical Association was honored as one of the institutions, you know, that has been here in Harlem keeping, you know, music alive, live music alive. And but there were others like Dr. Barbara Interior that was being honored, you know, with the National Black Theater, and both the Rivers is actually was, you know, co-host to this event with the New Heritage Theater and Community Works with Barbara Horowitz, you know. So it was really magnificent to see this to come together in that celebration on Sunday and see some that we haven't seen in some time, like George Faison, you know, with the Firehouse Theater. You know, just so many. It was just so. It was really. It's really now permanent. It's a permanent display in the lobby there on the second floor at the Harlem Hospital, and it's open to the public to come by and really get involved with knowing about the history. And also, they had like a group of students when they first opened it up. There was a group of students there, And it was just so great to see them, like, gravitating, you know, to different, the different, you know, portraits of these different institutions in Harlem and the artists, and Craig Harris, and just all in all, you know, Bill Saxton, you know, like that. So it's really preserved. I'm so thankful for that because it's not locked away in, like, a museum somewhere. It's somewhere that they can really walk into, you know, right here in Harlem and really, you know, be aware, maybe aware of what's, you know, available.
Thank you.
Imani,
thank
we're,
you so
we're
much.
Sort of running out of time here, but I do want you to close out with give us all the particulars how we can keep this going, because it's very important. Jazz is a very important part of our history. Well, most of our music is our history, most of the music. And we need to understand this real – we didn't get into it tonight, but we're going to do another show, and we're going to – there's a combination between house music, jazz, and so forth, so on we're going to do. And we would like to invite Imani back and to give us even more in depth of this history and how we can preserve this history. And I want to make, before Imani gets to the close here, I want to remind you to have a program following this program. We have Courtship and Marriage. That is coming on right after this program at 7 o'clock. It's a dynamic program. Stay tuned for it. Don't just leave when we close out here. And then we're here every Tuesday. We're here every Tuesday with inheriting the power of mental freedom. That's from 5 to 7 every Tuesday. And, of course, AM360 is every day. You hear a different program by a different host giving some insight on the very nature of things that we need to know about in order to make advance as a people. I want to really thank you all so much for coming out. But now, Imani, tell us a little bit about how we can stay in touch with you, what to look forward to in the future, and how best to, like I say, stay in touch.
Oh, absolutely. The website is namaharlem.org. So that's Nama, N for new, A for Amsterdam, M for musical, A for association, harlem.org. Also, you can find us on Facebook. If you're on Facebook, look up New Amsterdam Musical Association. That's the official page. Please like us there and stay connected. We always have programs, you know, ongoing. We even have community health programs. We look forward to you to be a guest presenter at the next event in April, April 28th. And also, April is Jazz Appreciation Month, so we have a lot going on for April as well. So, yeah, we'd love to come back and maybe bring one of our partners who does a jazz history tree. He's going to be doing an event in the April 13th to the 23rd, and some of that's going to be at NAMA. So pretty exciting things ahead, and looking forward to being back on your program. Again, and let me give a phone number as well. The phone number for the office is 212-281-1350. That's 212-281-1350. My direct number is 347-746-9749. Probably best to text because it's pretty busy, that line, my direct phone, but I wanted to give that as well. Thank you.
Thank you so very much, Imani. Imani, you're doing such a great, I won't say chore, but great, it seems like a chore, it's much work, but it's someone has to do it. And you stepped up. So that's the only way we're going to preserve our history, the only way we're going to preserve our culture. We have to have people like you to step up and have the just not just the talent to be a musician or a writer or something of that nature, but have the desire to want to see our culture preserved. And jazz, and I know a lot of people just think it's music, but jazz is one of the most impacting forms of music that we have in America, not in America, I say in the world, because the form of jazz, it follows the pattern of mathematics. because they did a study about 5 years ago, and it showed that the side of the brain that produces mathematics is the same side of the brain that produces music. It's because of the pattern. It's a very strong connection between the pattern in music and the pattern in mathematics. And so if you find yourself loving music and playing music and also being great in math, there's a reason for that. So it's a beautiful thing, and we need to get more of our people. I know you said you're teaching classes and so forth and having classes. If we get some online kind of classes going to in other states and other parts of the country that Africans and African Americans can participate in, because jazz is here to stay. But the way the world is looking at it, it doesn't have to be with the African Americans, because they're learning to play jazz and learning to play our music just like we do. And they think that I'm not saying I don't have any really evidence to say they're thinking, but I do have a pattern that is coming up. The pattern is coming up that they're trying to replace us in terms of this music. Japan has gotten more. I was listening to a person from Japan singing the blues. I thought it was somebody coming from Imani's group or somewhere. It's amazing how people have adopted what we created. We're not the copiers of this. We're not copying this. We're the creators of this, and that's important. And I thank you so much for coming on and giving us so this valuable information about our culture. This is this is what our culture is. This is one of the things that our culture is about, and we all should be trying to preserve it for ourselves. Not to get the approval of other people, but for ourselves, we should try to be preserving that. So do you have any other last words, Imani? I know Kim didn't get a chance to come on, but maybe next time.
Yes.
Well, I think if you can get away next time with more time, you could go deeper into different mm-hmm. things. I think it would be good for our audience, because we have a lot of people here from different parts of the country. And they're almost all of them are African American, so this almost pertains to all of them, and I think the effort has to come from all of us to really begin to embrace our culture and move into the future with the dignity and respect. So if you have any other words you want to and you got about 2 minutes or so, you can say, Imani.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so pretty much, you know, we're a nonprofit, 501c3, and so, you know, we do rely heavily in terms of, you know, donations and contributions, and we're so thankful for the musicians. We have a wide range of musicians and, you know, artists that come through to the organization and really lend their services and their talent. So if people want to really be a part of that, you know, mission, you know, please do reach out. We're really open, you know, and in fact, we're going to be doing a block party in the summer. We're planning a block party on June 29th, that Saturday, and that during that week is when we celebrate the 102nd year of being in the building and owning the building. It's a historic district here where we are, and the building is, you know, really made it in that realm of being a historical landmark. But on that day, we're going to really, even leading up to that time, we're planning to have a NAMA Music Fest and the block party and really engage the community. So the brother who was just on the line, if you, you know, can also share that information with your family and friends and associates that you know are in the area, you know, we just want to make sure that we can really get the word out, you know, so it's not a hidden gem anymore. It's really, really available to everyone. And you know, more programs, more ideas of things that can be done would be really appreciated. So thanks again. We're doing our community health event next month on the 28th. We look forward for you to come and do your workshop and share your jewels with the community when you come on back. We enjoy you every time you come.
Yeah. Certainly will. And I want to thank you again. The brother who was talking a little while ago, Brother Aziz, he's a well-known poet in our community. He writes some tremendous poetry, and I would like to, if he's in the area one day over in in New York, and to put something together, and so you can experience some of his poetry too. Because all that is musical. He's powerful. So I want to thank you all again for listening to us and taking your time out of your day and listening to the program we have. We regret that we missed him, Kim Austin.
She's in the middle of the rehearsal for the weekend, for the show, so that's part of what's going on there, too. Yeah.
Okay. I know we heard something in the background. That's what it was then. She was trying to juggle and walk and all those things at the same time. Okay. That happens. You know, that happens. That's what we got to do sometimes. You know, we want to make things work. Sometimes we have to do those things. But we still appreciate her efforts, and if she has the time. If the two of you can find a time on Tuesdays from 5 to 7 to break out more time, to take us a little deeper into thinking of what we can do and some of the historical aspects of maybe like Coltrane and people, why they were so important and how this connections should be made. And we should have a connection. All the common man up and down the street as African American should know, not just heard of music, but we should have a real strong connection that this is ours. This is shows our creativity, not only in science, but always. So just when we're going to be talking, and I still have. So I just want to remind
you
again,
remind
all of us that you're certainly welcome, and I'll be seeing you. So we want to let you all know we have courtships and marriages coming right up, right after this. And I want to thank all of you so very much for listening to us this evening. And tell your friends and neighbors that we're here every Tuesday. Every Tuesday 5 to 7. So let them know. Come on out and listen. We're getting ready to go off now. Thank you very much.
Take care. All the best.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.